Hello, everyone. I am Avital. Thank you for coming. I'm going to stand just because it's going to be more comfortable for me at the beginning. But I thought talking about community, this might be a good setting rather than rows. Great, thank you. We'll spend some time really with the individuals. Okay, so what I thank you for your remarks. And what I want to do is I want to think about some of the things you said by offering three different types of ideas. One is I want to offer a definition for community. There are many definitions, but I want to suggest one. The second is I want to suggest a few notions of what community can be. And then I want to suggest a model that can help us think both of different communities, but also how to think of some of the challenges that come up within community. So let's start with a definition. And actually, Andy, it has to do a lot with what you were speaking about. I wonder if it's useful to think of community as a web of connections between people. In other words, when we get together to daven, or when I send my kids to school, there's one dimension of relationships that happens. And the move from we all send our kids to school X, or we all go to daven in community Y, and community is that we actually connect on more than one front, okay? It's not just that we come together to daven, but we also do love and kindness together, and we also do learning together, okay? Or if we are a neighborhood, we not only live in the same neighborhood, but we do Purim together and once a year close the street and have a party on Motzei Shabbat on the road and so on and so forth, okay? And that maybe thinking of community as a complex array of relationships makes it more complicated, but also is what moves us from being an affinity group to being a community, okay? And now we have the challenge. Let's say we are a community that meets around learning. If we want to become a community, it means we have to add a dimension to where we meet. I think of the synagogue where I daven most of the time. Okay, we do tefillah together, and then we have a kiddush together, which means that we're also asking each other, how are you? Okay, and that has the potential of adding a dimension. Okay, so it's about the webs, and now, you know, when you're thinking of your own communities, what are those webs that you want the communities to be made up of? It adds a tremendous challenge because you cannot easily become an expert. In other words, let's say you are an institution that is an expert in prayer or an expert in environmental issues, okay? Now, if you want to become a community, by definition, you might be watering down some of what you do, because you want to connect on more than one front. What does that mean? Does it mean more people taking on responsibility that are diverse? Okay? Does it mean saying, okay, we don't do everything in expertise, but we do define ourselves as community? Some of my friends define the rabbi's role as a connection between Torah and life and a recognition of a lack of expertise in both. Okay, right? There are people who will come to me and I will send them to a psychologist who knows much better than me. And there are people who come to me and I will send them for a halachic tshuva to somebody else. But what I should become an expert with is some of those connections. Okay, so that's one, I think, prism that is useful to think of community and leaves us with the challenge of which webs we want to kind of weave and we think we're up to tackling. I want to say something about what community can be, and it has to do with some of the comments that came up really about individuals. Martin Buber, in his book Ha'or HaGanuz, The Hidden Light, offers a few teachings that I think here can be significant. So he says the following. In every person, b'chol adam, there's something very valuable that you do not find in any other person. That is why it says, "Al tehi baz lechol adam." Don't ever dismiss any person. Now, this is a statement about the uniqueness of individuals. Okay, but now he goes on to say, the Talmud tells us, "Kol tzadik nichva mechupato shel chaveru." It's a hard sentence to translate, and I'll tell you how he suggests to understand it. Min ha-mechupe ve-ha-mechuseh she-bechavero. Every righteous person gets hurt, gets burnt by what is hidden in somebody else. Why? Because every person has a unique thing hidden within them. And if it remains hidden, I remain in lack, because by definition, I don't have it. In other words, a community is not only a place to recognize the uniqueness of each person, but also to recognize the dependence I have on your uniqueness, and your uniqueness, and your uniqueness. Okay? And to continue that idea, there's a description of the following statement. There's a declaration made in the Talmud: everything has a place. Now, what does that mean? If everything has a place, also every individual has a place. So how come sometimes we feel like there's no room for us and there's no room to maneuver? Well, it's because sometimes our nature is to try and take over the place of the other. But the minute we recognize that each one is unique, I don't need to take the place of the other, because they will fulfill their role and I will fulfill mine. And community is about creating the spaces for each unique individual and recognizing that dependence. There's a story by Abba Kovner. Abba Kovner was a poet and a writer. Was born in Poland, came to Israel after the Holocaust, mamash in the founding years of Israel. Died in the late 80s, in 1987. And he describes coming to Israel and a moment, one of his first moments at the Kotel. He says, he describes himself as never having lost religion. He wasn't a traditional person in the normative sense, and he has the following description. The first week that I came to Israel, I went to the Kotel. My mother didn't command me to do this, but I decided to do it anyway. I stood one step away from the wall, one step away from the stones, and I felt that I don't belong. I felt that I am grounded somewhere else. I couldn't move. And then somebody tugged on my sleeve and asked me to join a minyan. I put on a hat and I joined the minyan. I said mincha, and I felt I had arrived. It's a very Jewish thing to be a part of a minyan, to know that the nine need the tenth, and that the one needs the nine. It might be the most significant thing in Judaism. There might be nothing more unique in this moment, in this very move. Okay, I think understanding minyan as a paradigm to how much I contribute, right? It's true, there can't be davening without that tenth person. And on the other hand, without those nine, there also can't be davening. And to understand our role in community as that simple, you know, one step that we do to become the ones who complete a minyan and who are also totally dependent on that minyan is a very valuable way, okay, to think of the relationship between the community and the individuals that make up that community. I think those are the ideas I want to throw out of what community can be. I think what's important to me to emphasize is that on the one hand we see this web, and on the other hand, the fine balance, the challenge that we have is to think of how each individual plays a role within the context of the whole and doesn't get lost within the context of the whole. Now I want to suggest that we take these pages around and this kind of diagram I find helpful in thinking actually of some of the challenges of community, and also it's a way I think that different communities define themselves and also different moments in community are defined. Just make sure that there's enough going around.
It's a different triangle.
That is correct. Okay. So this triangle suggests, I'm not sure I want to use the word tension, though maybe that's part of it. It has three poles, okay? The top one I called spirituality. Maybe spirit is more correct a word than spirituality. What I want to put forth in this pole is the vision of a community, okay? It's how the community understands why it exists, what's its central values, its philosophy, okay? The broad ideas that motivated people to create that community, okay? The spirit of the community. So that's at the top. Now, at the two bottom poles, we have what I called arrangements and relationships. Maybe we'll start with arrangements. Arrangements are actually the rules, the organizing practical principles that a community puts together and decides that will kind of guide their life. Okay, halacha is one type of arrangement, okay, not the only one. For example, in my synagogue, we start at 8:30 and we end at 11. Okay, that's an arrangement that the community has made, okay? We'll talk about that in a minute. Very often when there's a conversation within community and people defer to the arrangements, the language can be, it's my right to receive XYZ from the community, okay, right? The laws say that I deserve XYZ, okay? Now, it also defines what a community is able to do. For if you look at the Mishnah that you have just below, it's a suggestion of such an arrangement in the context of tzedakah, okay? Whoever has 200 zuz doesn't take tzedakah. They're talking here specifically of the gifts that are given from the field. Leket shechicha ve'peah. Okay? If I have 199, I'm allowed to take. And if I have 201, I am not allowed to take. Okay? Now, what's the goal of that? It's to make viable the tzedakah that a community can give, right? A community has a limit to what they can serve, so they put some boundaries on who can take. Okay, who can take and how much they can take, and so on. That's an example of such a rule. One of the weaknesses or fears when we divert to that kind of language, well, I'm going to suggest two fears with the issue of arrangements. One is that I sometimes place the law between me and the people from whom I'm making this requirement, and then there isn't really a meeting. Okay, the law comes to protect me from a meeting. Now, a meeting is risky because in meeting another individual, I might change. Okay, the way I understand my needs can change. The way I understand what other people can give me might change. Okay, but the rule is there almost as a buffer. Now, sometimes it's necessary, but let's recognize that it's there as a buffer. The second thing that a rule sometimes does is that it creates hierarchy. Now, hierarchy isn't always terrible, but let's just be aware of it, that I am creating a reality in which I have a demander, right? The rules say that if I have 199, I have to get tzedakah. I am demanding of the community, okay? There is a claimer and somebody he's claiming from. And that creates a certain type of relationship. Okay, so those are the arrangements. On the other hand, community probably cannot survive without saying Kiddush has to look more or less like this, okay? Or it has to be at so-and-so time, and so on. Now let's move to the issue of relationships, okay? Relationships are the more dialogical aspect of community, okay? It's about the quality of relationships that happens within community. And different communities can define in different ways what type of quality of relationships they want, okay? I'm partially saying this because I don't want to be judgmental here. Not all communities, what they want in order to function very, very well is the highest intensivity of relationships, okay? Sometimes the intense interpersonal is actually going to be a hindrance to what we want to do together, okay? There's some realms where that is fitting and others where it is not. Okay, and yet we have to, as a community, ask ourselves where we want to be in the realm of the relationships between people, how intensive relationships are, okay? Now, but we will say here the mirror image of the previous arrangement kind of dialogue. Here, in Levinas's language, people meet face to face, okay? It's about meeting. When there is a conversation that has to do with relationship, it's about meeting the other, and people might actually be affected by it, okay? We have a rule that filah has to end at 11, and somebody comes in and says, but there's a bar mitzvah to my kid this week. It's the longest parasha. It's going to take him an extra half an hour. The uncle from Missouri is going to come, and he's going to want to lead davening for an extra half an hour also. And for this week, I need it to end at 12. Okay, what do we do with that kind of a statement? Or, you know, as a parent, I come and I say, my kids can't survive till 11. You've got to shorten it till 10. Then they can sit next to me. But if you maintain it till 11, that excludes me from the ability to daven. Okay, so then suddenly the personal comes to mix in. And now if we want to add in the spirit of the law dimension also, right, in the guidelines of our community, it says one of our goals is we are created in order to have a spiritual tefillah. You can't limit the spiritual tefillah, says the Chazan. I have to daven not looking at my watch. Impossible for me to look at my watch. Okay, but then the people say, I can't invite anyone for lunch because I don't know when the davening is going to end. Right there we are in the relational. Okay, and that is the mess of conversation. And I think thinking of it as in these three different poles is a way to understand the kind of claims different people are making with each conversation and saying, now wait, where do we want to be? When do we want to be pulled in each direction? If we continue for 1 minute with the tzedakah example, there's a heartbreaking story on page number 2, which I think shows what happens when people get upset with some of the rules, okay? So Masechet Se'ah, right in the Mishnah, defines a very clear boundary. One who has 200 zuz may not take from the tzedakah, okay? Under that, yes. And now we have the following story. One of the students of Rebbe had 200 zuz minus 1. Okay, so he had 199. He was able to receive. And Rebbe was accustomed to give him his poor tithing once every 3 years. Okay, there's Maaser Ani, which is a kind of tithing which you give every 3 years. And Rebbe, every 3 years, gave it to him. Okay, now you can start imagining how maybe some of the other people in the community are feeling, right? Rebbe has his pet, I don't know if it's his cousin or whatever, the poor guy that is his neighbor, and he always gets the tithing from Rebbe, okay? Must have created mixed feelings in the community that Rebbe is only giving to one person. His students gave him the evil eye by completing it for him. They made sure that a minute before the third and the sixth year, they gave him an extra dinar. Okay? Now he couldn't receive anymore. Okay? Is it jealousy? Did Rebbe not see what was happening? Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Rebecca. Rebbe came to give him the money, and he said to Rebbe, I have the amount. Rebbe replies, you have the strike of the Pharisees. He understands that there's something social happening here. Okay? Well, what? The plague of the Purushim. The Purushim are actually, we are the Purushim. Okay? It's we are their descendants. Okay? But he understands that it's his students. He signaled to his students, they brought him to a shop, probably meaning a bar, and took from him the tiniest amount, and Rebbe gave him what he was accustomed to. Okay, so Rebbe kind of creates a situation where he spends the extra money and can then receive from him again. Okay, but I think this is a good example of, on the one hand, we have the arrangements, right? We have the rule of how to give tzedakah. Okay, and we need those rules. The spirit of the environment is giving tzedakah, but probably the students are also critical of Rebbe. You know, what are you doing here giving to only one person? Okay? And the relationship suddenly kicks in, right? The students are critical of Rebbe. The person himself maybe is counting on this regular money. How is he going to survive now without this money that he gets every 3 years from Rebbe? I was thinking about it. Who mentioned the issue of politics? I think you did. Yeah, and I was wondering where the political conversations come up in these three polls as well. I have to admit again that as an Israeli, looking at some of the conversation that's been happening in North America and among my friends, in Israel, there's almost an unspoken arrangement that you don't talk about politics in many, many spheres. Also within community, the assumption is that this is a front we're not going to agree on, and that people are so emotional about it, it's not a good place to go, and we avoid the issue. And observing as an outsider a little bit some of the different arrangements here about what conversation is legitimate and what not has been fascinating, okay? But then we have the personal relationships, and if we're a community that cares about the relationships, not to talk about something that we care about so very, very deeply, makes a very lacking community, okay? If we talk about our web, is this just an issue we're going to push away, or is this an issue we're going to be able to deal with and confront? And the last poll I want to just add in here, I think what I'm learning more and more and experiencing more and more is that politics is very broad. We think that it's just what we, you know, vote once every 4 years, but actually it's so prevalent in so many dimensions that almost any community with any definition that they have is going to touch on some of these issues in some way. And then how to have that conversation, it's not clear that it's avoidable. Okay, so what arrangements do we make to make it a viable conversation comes up. I wanna at this point open it up to some questions and remarks. If people want to share, I can also give you maybe one more example that's hot off the press in our community if we still have the time. Yes.
I tried to define community. One way I looked at it was when I've left that community, is that community still a part of me? Are there people reaching out? Or was it just an arrangement?
Great. That's a great definition of it. And I think it goes also to the original definition of webs. In other words, if it's all about one place, then probably if you move away, it will fall apart. But if there's more connections, right, then other pieces of the web are kept. Yes?
I just had a question in terms of like going to Hadar's vision for community, right, coming back to that. So for example, like I'm on the Upper West Side, and I don't feel like the Upper West Side is a community. Like I was saying before, I'm having trouble finding community. It's like a little here, a little there, et cetera, et cetera, even though everyone would be like, oh, Manhattan, Upper West Side, you know, it's got like the pinnacle of everything, right? So for me, my experience in terms of like Hadar and this weekend has been great, but a lot of it is focused on, from an outsider slash slightly insider perspective, you know, focusing on the expertise of Tefillah and making sure that that's really optimal and the learning component. But as I was mentioning before with like my definition of community, it's a lot more to that, and kind of like what you're trying.
It's a lot more?
There's a lot more to that definition of community, like with the triangle here, mm-hmm. and so forth, like with relationships and things like that. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, with this whole mission for Hadar and so forth, where do these other things kind of like fit in besides the tefillah and the like expert learning?
Give me three examples of other things.
I guess non-text-based relationships, tzedek, and other important aspects of Jewish community life, meaning cultural, historic, other forms of bonding together.
Great. It's a great question. I think in a deep way, we believe that vibrant communities are critical to a vibrant deep Jewish life. And I think we share your intuition that tefillah and learning are not sufficient. Okay? I think they are critical elements. I think they're beyond tools, they're also an essence in and of themselves, but that they're not sufficient. I can tell you a little bit about somehow about how some of the other components go into the yeshiva life. Okay, so for example, our fellows on a regular basis volunteer in a Jewish home. That is, what's interesting there is that it's part of their experience, and it's something they do consciously. In other words, it's not a side activity that they do to put a check on, but it's actually something we give time to with them to contemplate how it affects them, what kind of... It's an opportunity for growing in midot in a conscious way. Also, what happened at a certain point is that we moved to doing this with one specific institution, which means we have an ongoing relationship with that institution. In other words, even though the fellows, some who was talking about Chicago being a transient community, Vincent. So I think part of what has happened is that despite our full-time fellows are to a certain degree a transient community, we have an ongoing relationship with this institution, which is significant. It's a good question now how we support that kind of work with other people. So we are a diverse community, and some of our alumni and some of the communities we're in touch with have chesed very strongly on the top of their list, and it's something we support their doing, both ideologically, support and not only they go, but also think through with them how to do it, okay? Both practically and with some of the content that we talk about. I want to just give one more example of something we do in the realm of culture. We just had an event in Israel with Rav Eli and with a singer called Shai Tzabari, who is doing, he is a popular singer, but he's thinking a lot about tefillah, and many of his songs that you hear on the radio are actually tefillah songs. And that's, so, not, let's put it this way, not from the very narrow definition of religion, okay? Yes, of course, in the broad definition of religion. So I think that's a kind of example where where culture must come in, and does. You know, some of the events we do at the yeshiva around books stem from a belief, just like you're sharing, that broad culture has to be a part. That it cannot. We're not going to get everything just from tefillah and Torah learning. Yes, Nigel.
Just a couple of very quick things. One, which I kind of think, in a way, we should have said earlier on, is that the English word community we use very widely. And when we talk about the Jewish community or the New York Jewish community, it's different than thinking about a kehillah in a narrow sense. And
right.
I think that that's really, in a sense, the focus of this.
Yes.
Second thing is that I was thinking that one of the definitions, I think, of community, and this goes back to what you were saying about Minyan earlier on, but I want to broaden it, is that community is a place that somebody can call on you, can actually make an expectation on you. A certain piece of American life is about you do your thing, I'll do my thing, you can do your thing, we won't bother each other. And I think that in a certain kind of way is the opposite of the Jewish understanding of community, which is the nature of being in community together is I have the ability to make a call on you.
Just to add into that, I think that is exactly the point of the Abba Kovner text about Minyan, okay? That someone can tug on your sleeve and say, I need you now.
And
we
it's not just about Minyan.
No, of course, of course.
And the third thing, yep. There's a friend of mine, James Grant Rosenheck, who is very involved in the Kibbutz Misimetiyot, the new intentional urban kibbutz in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he said to me that I found very fascinating and very useful was we were talking about intentional community, he said, you have to understand the distinction between friends and members of the community. He said, not everybody who's in my community is necessarily my friend, and many of my friends don't live in my community. And that the definition of community is partly about being able to feel oneself explicitly to be in relationship with somebody who isn't my closest friend. And I actually think that, and people are nodding, and it's because it's unusual for us to hear that said, and yet in a certain kind of way, I think that it's definitional, and so I wanted to have that. I think those pieces go, I think those things sit with Jewish tradition and textual tradition and the rabbis,
right?
I mean, there's a certain kind of way in which I may not, that may actually be a bad example, but it's that I don't necessarily even have to agree with you,
right,
to feel that we're in a community together. And I think that the question of how we take those principles or ideas and play them out sociologically is, I think, a really interesting one.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
So, I think that when I talked about Chesed earlier, in your response to it, you know, it was overly narrow. And I think often in synagogue communities, people think about Chesed far too narrowly. Like, we do Chesed over here. Like, when we go visit the nursing home, we're doing Chesed. When I talk about Chesed, love and kindness in a community, it's meant to define literally every interaction in the community, right? So when we talk about politics and why we can't talk about politics, we can't talk about politics because we make terrible assumptions about each other. And we approach those conversations like enemies. Instead of approaching those conversations from a place of chesed, from a place of, I trust you that you want the best things for the world, and then your political opinions come from that place. And I also expect you to, if I'm in pain about the state of our politics, I expect you to approach my pain and my vulnerability with loving kindness. And that, to me, is, you know, it's that ability to call on each other. Where does that come from, right? It comes from a comfort level. What we are committed to is to engaging each other from a place of loving kindness. And I think that it's also, I also wanted to go back to something that Ezra said about people's level of engagement, right? You know, in the sort of 100-year-old principles of the Settlement House movement, reciprocity is one of the principles of the Settlement House movement. This idea that everybody puts themselves into the community is what makes the community rich. And so I think that sometimes, you know, a construct of chesed where, like, we go to the nursing home to visit the vulnerable people and we do our chesed there, that's not chesed in the community, right? Like, are those people who you're visiting, are they part of your community? Do you give them the opportunity to do kindness to you? If you don't, then it's not chesed and it's not community. And so the question is, you know, recognizing is first of all intentionally building communities which include people of different levels of vulnerability, and recognizing that even though there are people of different levels of vulnerability, everybody is vulnerable, is in need of chesed, and expecting everybody to engage with each other in love and kindness at all times, online for locks at Kiddush, right? Like, at all times, right? Talking about politics. That's how I see the intersection of chesed and community, which I think is very different than a lot of synagogues where, you know, people elbow each other online and they yell at each other about politics if it ever comes up, and then they go to, like, visit the sick, you know, once a month.
Great. I want to say a couple of things. I think it's partially what I meant when I said that we use it as an opportunity to grow in midot. In other words, we don't leave it at the home, but partially we require of our fellows to kind of think what it means to their general engagement. In my shul in Israel, in the founding moments, the idea came up that there should be a greeter. And that a greeter. In other words, that we take turns, all of us in the community, standing at the entrance and greeting first and foremost each other, and then also our guests. And there was a big uproar against it.
What were the arguments?
It's artificial. Also, discomfort. I want to just walk in and go to my seat. What are you saying hello to me? What are you noticing me? And it was fascinating. And I think it's also a very, like, Israeli, cynical, I'm just leave me alone kind of response. But the claim for those who pushed it were, this is critical in the way we... There are greeters. There are greeters, and there are, you know, different people of different levels of communities. But so I think that's one thing I want to say, which is just interesting. And I want to emphasize two things that I think are critical in how you described it. One is level of engagement. I think you're right that level of engagement is very important, and you bring people in when you have an array of things that people can do in order to give, and they're also engaged. And the second thing I want to emphasize is the issue of mutuality, which I think is also critical. I'll give you another example again from my synagogue. In my synagogue, we have hosts. And again, we very much make sure that the host, first and foremost, is there to support people from within the community. And then, of course, guests who are there on occasion are also welcome to join the meals. And there's an insistence that everyone in the community take part in hosting, and that it not be these people always host and these people are always hosted. And we have a structure to help some of the people who feel not able to host figure out how to do it, whether it's by putting people together, you know, one person has a home and the other person cooks well, so you put them together, stuff like that, so that you're on both ends all the time. And that seems to me very critical, like you're saying. It can't always be I'm always in the role of visiting, or I'm always in the role of being visited. It's got to be something mutual for it to work in a community. I think we have time for one more comment, and then we're going to have to go downstairs.
In some prayer communities I've been in, there has been a tension between like formalizing those roles and trying to make it so that it becomes organic, like things like greeting. Like,
right.
Of course, have a name tag that says, hi, I'm your greeter today, so that it feels artificial. And I've appreciated the like trying to make it organic, but also see how when you do that, the people who are more on the margins don't
right.
get included, because if uh-huh. you're well established within a network, you don't need a greeter or as much or hosting as much.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you or anyone had thoughts to share about how to make sure that everyone's getting included, but really make it so that it's not just appointing people or paying people to do including, but making it so that it is the community that takes care of each other.
I just had a conversation with Rav Benny Lau, and part of the notion that came up, which I think, again, was echoed in some of the things you said and comes up with, I think, a lot of people who work with disabilities, is the recognition that we all have disabilities. And that I think that recognition helps make supporting more mutual and more organic, because there's a recognition that there are moments where I'm in need and there are moments where I can give. And I think if community can define those different strengths of different people, that might be one. I mean, I'm saying it theoretically because our time is very short, but I think that's one way in. And also making very clear responsibilities for everybody. It was very courageous of our leadership initially to not let people off the hook. When people said, I can't, it was to think with them how yes, rather than to let them, you know, just stay in the, in secluded kind of, I can't, I'm not up to it, and then people feel very able. I think we have to go downstairs. Thank you very, very much to all of you.